Welcome to Delight in Grace, the teaching ministry of Rich Powell, pastor of Grace Bible Church in Winston-Salem. Author Kay Warren recalls her visit to Rwanda not long after the horrific 1995 genocide that left 1 million dead. She expected to find monsters there, men and women with leering, menacing faces. Instead, she found people much like herself, smiling, chatting, caring for their children, living their lives. Upon her return, she wrote, "There were no monsters in Rwanda, just people like you and me." She continues, "You might as well face the shameful truth. You and I, put in the right situation, will do absolutely anything. Given the right circumstances, I am capable of any sin. All of mankind is broken. The beautiful image of God in each of us is distorted and marred by our sinful nature. The world offers 1,000 fixes, but we find ourselves irreparable. So the question is, can anything really make a difference? Is there a remedy for broken souls?" In today's message, Pastor Rich addresses this question using our text in 2 Corinthians 2. Let's listen in.
If we look what Paul has covered already in chapter 1 and 2, beginning of chapter 2, we understand that we are part of a broken world and broken people. And that includes us. If you were to look in chapter 1, verses 3 through 8, just in that brief paragraph, the words sufferings, tribulation, trouble, afflicted happens 8 times in that one paragraph. And as Paul was recounting those, he ended up by saying that we were burdened beyond measure and that we despaired even of life. So in the difficulties of the ministry, in the brokenness of the world, the Apostle Paul got to the point where he had resigned himself to thinking, this is it, we're going to die. This is the end of our life here on this earth. And it's going to happen in the middle of ministry. It's because we live in a broken world. And the broken world is full of broken people. Albert Einstein says, the real problem is in the heart and minds of men. It is not a problem of physics, but of ethics. It is easier to denature plutonium than to denounce the evil spirit of man. It's a little bit of wise insight there. It is a world of brokenness. And not only was there brokenness outside, but Paul, as an apostle, was dealing with trouble even within the church. Those who had come to Christ, those who had responded to the gospel. He was the founder of the Corinthian church. And yet he was having to deal with sinful, immoral, behavioral issues in the church. We covered that in chapter 2, look at verses 1 to 4. Look at chapter 2, verse 4. He says, "Out of much affliction and anguish of heart, I wrote to you with many tears, not that you should be grieved, but that you might know the love which I have so abundantly for you." So he writes to them out of a grieving, broken heart. Why? Well, because corrective action needed to be taken. There was immorality in the church, and he was calling upon the leaders of the church to rise up to corrective action in the church. Would there be repentance among Christians? Would there be repentance? And if there was, would there be forgiveness? Or are the people of the church just going to act like everyone else in the world, where it doesn't matter if there's sin? Or if there is behavior that's disagreeable, you label them and write them off. Paul was wondering. But you see, what we need to recognize, that while we say that there's brokenness in the world, you and I have to look in the mirror and we have to admit truthfully and honestly that we are a part of that brokenness. In her book, Acedia and Me, Kathleen Norris writes this, "I have become like the child I once knew who emerged one morning from a noisy, chaotic Sunday school classroom to inform the adults who had heard the commotion and had come to investigate." And they said, we're being bad and we don't know how to stop. I am a part of the brokenness. In her article that she wrote, the article was entitled, The Only Hope for Monsters. This was written by Kay Warren. She visited the country of Rwanda, where there had been quite a bit of violence. And the country was undergoing reconstruction. Listen to this. The first time I visited Rwanda, I went looking for monsters. I had heard about the 1994 genocide that had left 1 million people dead, tortured, raped, viciously murdered. And somehow I thought it would be easy to spot the perpetrators. I naively assumed I would be able to look men and women in the eye and tell if they had been involved. I was full of self-righteous judgment. What I found left me puzzled, confused, and ultimately frightened. Instead of finding leering, menacing creatures, I met men and women who looked and behaved a lot like me. They took care of their families, went to work, chatted with their neighbors, laughed, cried, prayed, and worshipped. Where were the monsters? Where were the evildoers capable of heinous acts? Slowly, with deepening sense of dread, I understood the truth. There were no monsters in Rwanda, just people like you and me. Before that trip, I can't tell you the number of times I reacted to evil I read about or witnessed by saying, I would never do that. But thousands of years of bloody human history prove differently. 54 years of my own history prove differently. We are all proficient in our ability to conceive, plan, and execute evil. Of course, we don't call it evil when we're the ones involved, but it is. As French writer La Roche something observed, too many syllables, there is hardly a man clever enough to recognize the full extent of the evil he does. You might as well face the shameful truth. You and I, put in the right situation, will do absolutely anything. Given the right circumstances, I am capable of any sin. I've grown more afraid of the monster lurking in the dark corners of my soul than of any monster lurking in the dark corners of my house. And here is the question this morning. Is there anything that can make a difference? Anything? Can people change? Is there any hope for the broken world? This was Paul's relentless pursuit as a minister of the gospel. And as he was ministry busy with mission work, he had already left the Corinthian church, an intact church, an indigenous church, and he'd moved on to plant other churches. And yet he was tightly connected to that church. And his pursuit was looking back at them. I taught them the gospel. Has it made a difference? We know what the Corinthian people are like. They're an immoral people. They're a proud people. Has the gospel made a difference? We're dealing with misbehavior, broken behavior, not only outside, but broken behavior within the church and the people of the church, an offender within the church, the leaders of the church called to rise up to take corrective action. And Paul is asking the question, has the gospel made a difference? Or is it just going to be like any other group of people where they either ignore it and sweep it under the rug or they just label a person and write them off? Has the gospel made a difference? This was so heavy on Paul's heart. Look what he says. Verse 12, chapter 2, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, a door was opened to me by the Lord. He's going on in ministry and he says, I had a wide open opportunity to serve God and to preach the gospel of grace. But, look what he says in verse 13, I had no rest in my spirit. Why is that? I did not find Titus, my brother. What was he expecting from Titus? News from the Corinthian church. Had the gospel made a difference? Was there repentance? Was there forgiveness? Paul needed to know. He was so restless about it that he could not continue in his ministry. He had a wide open door of ministry in Troas. But he says, I can't do it. I can't keep going. I've got to find out what's going on at Corinth. Has the gospel made a difference in these people's lives? So he goes on to Macedonia. Because there, he's going to meet up with Titus. He needs to hear the news before he can go on with the gospel of grace. Keep your finger there. Turn to chapter 7 and verse 5. I can do this because it'll be a while before we get there. Chapter 7, verse 5. For indeed, when we came to Macedonia, remember he left Troas and now he's going on to Macedonia. Why? Because he wants to meet up with Titus. He needs to hear the news. Verse 5. Indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest and we were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts, inside were fears. Nevertheless, God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by his consolation, that which he was comforted in you when he told us of your earnest desire and your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoice even more. Good news. Lives have been transformed. The gospel has made a difference. And it's not just about people turning over a new leaf. No, indeed, as he taught the gospel of grace, people have been changed at the level of desire. People's lives are being transformed.
Thanks for joining us here at Delight in Grace. You've been listening to Rich Powell, the lead pastor at Grace Bible Church in Winston-Salem. The Delight in Grace mission is to help you know that God designed you to realize your highest good and your deepest satisfaction in Him, the one who is infinitely good. We hope you'll join us again on weekdays at 10 a.m.